I guess, first of all, for people who, I guess, haven't been following the story as closely, and we've been reporting on the UniMelb encampment as well as all the other ones around the country, could you briefly talk about the Solidarity encampment at the University of Melbourne and the sit-in at Mahmood's Hall? And I guess, what are some of the wins that have been achieved so far?
Yep. So we started the Solidarity encampment on the 25th of April. So that was set up on South Lawn, and that was sort of in place for about 3 weeks. And in that 3 weeks, we saw like a huge amount of growth, of support. Community really got behind us in that time. We had teach-ins and food being brought by community. Like, it was a really beautiful activist space. And I guess the goal of the encampment was to pressure the university to cut their ties with weapons manufacturers, particularly those that were involved in the genocide in Gaza. So the encampment was happening for about 3 weeks, and then we had a rally, and an autonomous group of students decided to start a sit-in in formerly Arts West, Mahmood's Hall, renaming that building to Mahmood's Hall, and then, yeah, beginning a sit-in. So that went for about a week, where people, you know, had their tents and marquees inside, just in like the foyer and open spaces on the ground floor. The message was still the same, to cut ties with weapons manufacturers. But in the time that we were sort of on the lawn, we didn't really receive, you know, much of a response or much engagement from the university in that respect. So this was just a way of drawing even more attention to the issue and, you know, letting the university know that we're serious about wanting these changes. After the week of the sit-in, so during the sit-in, negotiations were sort of ongoing with the university, and they intensified. And then at the end of the week, we agreed to disclosure. So that meant that the university was going to disclose all of their ties to weapons manufacturers, particularly those research collaborations and partnerships. So that was agreed on in exchange for packing up the sit-in and leaving the building. So we did that, and then the university began their disclosure. I think it was on the 30th of June. So they started to disclose in more detail their weapons ties to various weapons manufacturers and also to the Department of Defense, the US Department of Defense. So, yeah, that was a major win. It's definitely step one of a few. So the ultimate goal is to get the university to divest from those companies, but I guess we have to know the extent of their involvement to then try and get them to divest.
100%. And I think, you know, it's important to celebrate the small wins along the way as well. But I guess the university has responded by cracking down on students. And they've threatened, I think it's 21 students with expulsion or other disciplinary measures. Could you talk a bit about what these measures are and I guess how students are responding to this crackdown?
Yeah, so the penalties range from a caution all the way through to suspension and termination, and quite a few in the middle that sort of affect our enrollment. So yeah, it was 21 students. We're quite surprised about how heavy-handed the university has been, particularly since we were in ongoing negotiations, you know, in good faith with the university. We came to that agreement. It was a mutual agreement. So we're surprised that the university, I guess they're trying to, it seems like they're using these misconduct notices to punish the students for getting the university to agree to the disclosure, which is quite a strange thing to do, in my opinion. Mm. And yeah, there are only about 21 students that were issued the misconduct notices, but at any one time in the building, there were probably between 70 to 100 people. So they've selected people, I think, to try and make an example, try to deter people from doing the same thing later on. So yeah, I guess the students have been quite surprised and not surprised at the same time. I guess surprised in terms of the methods and the way that it's come about, but not surprised in that, you know, we knew that the university was not happy with us being there. And yeah, we had a rally on the first day of the hearings, which was last Wednesday, had a lot of community support in that. And yeah, just been trying to advocate for ourselves the best that we can with the university.
Yeah, and something that's kind of come out is that the university has been employing kind of surveillance strategies on students, particularly obviously the students who are being threatened with the disciplinary measures. So could you talk a little bit about this surveillance and what kind of stuff they've been doing?
Yeah, so when we all received the notices, we got a few documents attached to an email. One of those documents had CCTV footage, like stills of each of us, as well as Wi-Fi tracking location. So essentially, they've taken like stills from CCTV, and then also they've been able to identify exactly where particular students have been at what time, in which building, on what level. And they've attached those sort of Wi-Fi pings to, those documents. So yeah, we were really surprised that they sort of took those measures to identify particular students. There were security guards at the entrances of the building for a period of time that were taking people's identification. So the security guards already had identification of people that had willingly given their details, but the university chose to, use these like tracking and surveillance methods to find particular students. And yeah, I guess it's pretty shocking as well, because in 2016, the university, when they adopted their new Wi-Fi network, they said basically we're just using this Wi-Fi to identify dots on a page and just to identify like traffic throughout the university. But we're not breaching privacy because we can't identify the students. But obviously the university has lied, so you can see the location is directly attached to like a student ID that has been then used to identify a student. So yeah, that's been pretty shocking. We didn't expect the university to go to those lengths, but they have, and it's opened up a whole new conversation about, the way universities are using student data. People are really hesitant to, I know I'm really hesitant to connect to the university Wi-Fi, and I'm just very cautious now when I'm on campus. So yeah, it's been pretty surprising actually.
Yeah, and I've seen some comparisons drawn, obviously not to the same scale, but like the surveillance of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, and now surveillance being employed on students at Australian universities is pretty chilling.
Yeah, we have one of the students who's receiving misconduct. She's actually from Palestine, and she, had a really hard time like grappling with that because, she'd left Palestine, come here to study. She'd left a, highly surveilled occupation state, and now she's come here, and the same sort of technologies are being used on her when she's protesting to try and, get the university to divest from those companies that are being, that are involved in the killing of her own people. So that was quite difficult for her to get her head around. And also, we don't know what what technology is being used, like which companies are being used. It would be pretty ironic if those companies were the same companies we're trying to get them to divest from, but we don't know exactly which tech's being used.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I guess this is kind of all taking place in a bit of a broader context of, I guess, anti-protest laws. There's a few other universities that are also cracking down on activism. Last week on the podcast, we were talking about the campus access policy at UCID, which is basically making people have to ask permission to even like hold a megaphone or put up posters and hold protests and things like that on campus. And they've explicitly banned kind of occupations and sit-ins. And then, just yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, the University of Newcastle encampment was getting shut down by security. There's been an expulsion of an ANU student. What are your kind of thoughts on this kind of overall kind of intensified repression of activism, particularly of student activism?
Yeah, well, it's quite shocking. I mean, when you boil it down, really, these protests and these, methods are being used to try and enact policy change in universities. Like ultimately, we want an ethical policy where we don't want our university to work with weapons companies. And, we've tried every single met, we've emailed, we've called, we've met with the university, and the university has not responded to any of those. And that's what, those sorts of engagements are what lead to protests and people feeling like they need to take further measures. So I guess I would put questions to universities, like if students, are genuinely unhappy with a policy that a university have, and they have taken all of these measures to communicate this to the university, and the university still ignores them, what do they expect students to do? And now they've put on, their repression, sort of their laws to try and get students to have to ask for permission to do protests and things like that. What does that say about like freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, and that sort of thing? So I guess the universities in general are creating absolutely no space for robust dialogue and conversation about these policies, And we're seeing more and more that universities are sort of, they're operating like corporations rather than universities, and that's really concerning. So we need to be able to have a voice to express why we're not happy with that, and what changes we want. So it's quite shocking, but at the end of the day, these measures only make students want to fight harder and, you know, achieve their goals even more with even more vigor. So, yeah.
Definitely. Well, just as you mentioned earlier, there was a protest last week in support of, you know, against this repression of students and in support of the 21 students who are being, having the disciplinary hearing. And you mentioned it had a lot of community support, and I saw some photos of that, and it looked really great. I was just wondering if there's any more actions coming up, or how else can people who can people show their support or solidarity with the campaign?
Yeah, well, I guess at the moment, semester two starts next week. So we've all been sort of left hanging a little bit in limbo. We're not really sure, you know, we haven't received any outcomes. I guess at the moment, we are asking people to, you know, email the university, email the vice chancellor. If you're an organization or a company, put out a public statement of support. You know, we're in a position where we can't really do much until we find out the outcomes. But yeah, I would say public expressions of support, contacting the university. If you're an alumni, you know, you've got a lot of weight in what you're saying to the university. If you're a donor of the university as well. So yeah, just to demand that the university drops these misconduct allegations.
Awesome. So yeah, anyone listening, make sure you support in any way that you can. And I guess as semester two starts, we'll look to, you know, how all the campaigns at different campuses around the country kick off. I know, obviously, you've won disclosure at University of Melbourne, but we've got to keep going for full divestment. And I know a lot of other campuses are kind of saying, you know, we're kicking back into gear as the semester starts up again. So we'll be following that on here and on the Green Left website and everything, so people can follow along there. We'll definitely love to have you back to chat with any further developments that happen in the next few months.
Sounds great. We'd love to. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much.